Thanks for stopping by for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane. And Ryan, yesterday we began a conversation with two guests who completely blew the idea that Christians are supposed to be nice right out of the water.
Well, I know Paul and Sandy Coughlin gave our listeners a lot to think about, and we're glad they came back for another day to discuss this issue more. Paul has a specific message for men as outlined in his book, No More Christian Nice Guy, When Being Nice Instead of Good Hurts Men, Women, and Children.
And Paul actually calls himself a recovering nice guy. Hmm. And he shared last time about his own problems with passivity. And today we'll hear some more details about how that affected their marriage and how he eventually found help. Last time, he also gave an overview of why so many men in this culture today are passive and what a true picture of masculinity looks like. Of course, anyone who missed day one can request a CD or listen in at drjamesdobson.org.
Or you can listen in on the Family Talk app anytime you want.
Good reminder.
Both men and women really will find a lot of great wisdom there. Today we're going to pick up where we left off, addressing the difference between being nice and being good.
Before we do, just a little bit more about our guests, Paul and Sandy Coughlin. They've been married now for 21 years and have three children. They've written a second book together called Married But Not Engaged, Why Men Check Out and What You Can Do to Create the Intimacy You Desire. Paul is also the founder and president of The Protectors, which is a faith-based solution to adolescent bullying that's been taught in both public and private schools around the world.
Well, let's rejoin this conversation now as my dad talks to Paul a little bit more about his own story. Here now is our host, Dr. James Dobson, on this Family Talk broadcast.
Well, Paul and Sandy, I'm delighted to have you back with us again today. I thought the program last time was very interesting and provocative and helpful, and that you're really on target with the concepts that you have in these two books. Paul, I'm going to address the first question to you again. Growing out of something Sandy said last time, that you were a nice guy but not a good guy, according to this definition, when you all first married, and I suspect, and in fact I think you've said in the book, that it comes out of the way you were raised, and you were more or less taught to be a passive male.
Sure.
Explain where that came from.
Yes, I had a upbringing that was a bit tough at pivotal times. My father, wonderful man, I have such great fond memories of him. Wish he would have been more assertive in our home. He married a tiger of a woman. She a lot of jalapeno in my mom. And though that jalapeno has a beautiful side to it, really does, it also has a downside. She was abused herself by her father. My parents are Irish immigrants, and my grandfather was a tough man by all accounts. So she was the oldest of three, and she experienced great difficulty at pivotal times. Not always, but pivotal times. And when we were growing up, I'm the youngest of four, and she was physically abusive, emotionally abusive. I'd come home from school, and she'd say, "They're coming for you in an hour and a half. They're coming for you in an hour. They're coming for you in a half hour. They'll be here any minute to take you away because you're such an evil boy."
She actually said that to you?
Said these things. And there's worse.
Considering the vulnerability of children, it's amazing for me to hear stories like that of people who would be so cruel to a child.
It was designed, I guess, to get me to behave. And it does get you to behave a certain way, but in ways that are just unforeseen. With the physical beatings that took place,
intimidation in so much of what being at home was about.
It wasn't a lot of fun, sure. It was humiliating. It was.
Well, what was your father like? He must also have been somewhat passive.
He was. I did see him stand up. At times, he was also working about 7 days a week. He was a house painter down in Southern California, and he was gone a lot. And so he would work his regular job, then on the weekends, jobs on the side, and supporting a family of six by himself. So I'm not trying to make excuses for it, but abusive people are sneaky people. They want to make sure that they have assurance of victory when they do abuse. So it would be done outside of his sight often. And I just would not think of running to him and saying that these things are occurring.
Was he the kind of guy that would not stand up for what is right?
He was a more reserved man. He would stand. Yeah, I saw him stand up many times. I admired him.
Was he your role model?
Of the two, yes, of course, yes. I really looked up to my father very much.
And yet
so.
Something was missing there as you patterned yourself after him.
Something was missing. I didn't know what it was. I was just, and I also raised myself by and large. I didn't have a lot of guidance. I was pretty much on my own for, I was fed and that sort of stuff, but basic. I had no curfew as I remember it, from like the ages of 11 on. I just
and
could
come
and go as I please.
This was manifested in you was fearfulness, passivity, maybe intimidation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, being uncomfortable just to go into adult life. I mean, as I say in the book, I had a PhD in passivity by the time I graduated from sixth grade, right? In our home, there was only one mood that was allowed, and that was our mother's. And if anything went outside of those parameters, it was intolerable. It would not be tolerated. It would be hunted down. And you weren't really allowed to have a will outside of what she wanted you to have. You couldn't facial expressions. You couldn't have a facial expression she didn't like, so you'd have to change that. You couldn't think things she didn't want you to think, so you had to change that.
Okay.
So you couldn't be a full individual.
Okay, Sandy. Now, you all met where and when?
We met 16 years ago in Southern Oregon, and we dated for a year and married.
Hmm. And you told us last time that Paul was passive then. Did you recognize that before you got married?
No, I did not recognize that. Because here's the deal about a Christian nice guy. There's an upside to a Christian mm-hmm. nice guy, or at least there was to Paul.
Just enough to fool the woman.
No, they're often thoughtful, charming, humorous.
Caring.
Very caring. Very caring. So the down...
That is attractive
it's
to
very,
a woman.
It's very attractive. It's
until
very
she marries him.
And I thought he was a nice guy, and I thought that was, you know, what I wanted.
I have said many times that a woman can make or break a man,
mm-hmm.
and I am convinced of that. I am convinced that I'm a far better man because of Shirley and because of her influence, especially in those early days where she was so committed to me and so respectful of me. And she believed in me before I had done anything of significance. I was still a student.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me without hammering me or nagging me how to be more of a man,
mm-hmm.
how to be strong enough to go face the world and to take a risk and all that. She really made an incredible contribution to me. I kind of have a notion you did the same thing.
I did. It took me some time to learn that, though. I'd call Shirley would be considered a wife of goodwill.
Yes.
And that's what we go through in this book, Married But Not Engaged. We talk about there is hope for the woman who is married to a nice guy if she is a woman of goodwill, if she's willing to have empathy and see behind her husband's eyes where he has been, what he has come through, and go alongside him.
How did you encourage him to go for it, to stand up when he's challenged, to oppose evil, to stand up for righteousness and justice? How'd you get him to do that?
Well, I would say Paul actually initiated going to a counselor on his own. And at first, I was a little intimidated by that. I wasn't too excited about that.
And then I would say, well, baby, the proof is in the pudding. If bad things happen from this, then let's try something else. But this seems to make sense. We're fortunate, and I do. I prescribe to the belief that a blow up is much better than a slow leak. And there was no real blow up at this point, other than one thing that did it for me. I would see other men with their children, and be more emotionally available. They'd just be more connected with their kids, mm-hmm. right? I saw that in other men. I wanted it, and I knew I was not fully capable of doing that the way I wanted to. I mean, don't get me wrong, I connected, but not to the level I wanted to. I mean, here I am, a man, and I have these three great children, and they want to know me. That is so flattering, right? Because, come on, guys, no one at work is going to want to know you at that level, right? You have these three people in a short period of time want to get to know you. And what a nice guy does is I was fearful of emotion. So I would hold them at bay, particularly with negative emotions, because they felt horrible to me at the time. So I kind of keep them at arm's length. That is must be part of the definition of cruelty, because to a child, if you hold them at arm's length at that age, they're not going to say, well, you know the reason why dad is emotionally unavailable. No, they think there's something wrong with me. They think I am unlovable, or I'm not worthy, or I'm broken, or I'm defective. That's why my dad won't connect with me. Now, they may figure that out later in life, in their 20s or 30s, maybe even 40s. But they don't know that during that crucial adolescent time, and it is cruel. So you know, Christian nice guys, if you're not going to do it for your wife, if you're not going to do it for your own soul, if you're not going to do it to be a better disciple of Jesus, because you really can't follow Jesus if you're a fearful person very far, then do it for the kids. They need that. It's a sin if you don't do that soul work.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most difficult counseling problems to deal with is associated with what you're saying here, where a woman is, by a particular woman, is by her nature aggressive and assertive and confident and maybe easily irritated. And she's married to a guy who is passive and somewhat fearful and non-responsive. And I think that may be the linkage to the title of your second book here, Married But Not Engaged. You're married, but you don't engage emotionally. Mm-hmm. So he won't give her or can't give her what it is she's looking for. So she begins taunting him and pushing him and attacking him mm-hmm. and belittling him yeah. in front mm-hmm. of the kids. And he still won't stand mm-hmm. up for himself. And he goes in and he turns on Monday Night Football mm-hmm. and he retreats into a book or television or more commonly work.
Yes.
And the frustration that that creates for a woman is intense, because she'd rather he'd stand up and scream at her
yes.
than to say nothing and be like a puppy dog that goes off with his tail between his legs. Sandy, do you recognize what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely recognize that. And that's where in the book that we talk about, if you're a woman of goodwill, there are some key aspects that you can put into place in your marriage.
All right, like what?
Well, first of all, to be a mirror of reality to your husband. You know, often a nice guy doesn't even realize that he's a nice guy. But to, in a non-attacking way, say, honey, this is what your passive lifestyle is doing to me and how it's hurting the kids and how it's hurting you. And to start trying to communicate with him about that in a non-attacking way and to give him room to make mistakes. It's really easy for an aggressive woman to just, you know, bam, bam, bam. And then to not correct him when he does try to move forward.
And build his confidence.
And build his confidence. And
absolutely.
And you may need a counselor to help with that. That's what you guys found.
Well, yeah, I had individual counseling, and that soul work was mine to do, right? Another thing that nice guys do, it's manipulative, and you've probably seen it in counseling, where they'll try to get other people to do his soul work for him, right? That the reason I'm this way is because you behave this way. No, just take ownership of it. This is your life. This is what you need to do. And if you're married to a woman of goodwill, she will come alongside you. She won't do it perfectly. No one in life does it perfectly. Yeah. But a person of goodwill, when the day is over, when the night is over, she will, you know that she's in your corner. And if you have someone like that in your life, you are blessed indeed.
And speaking as a man who has a woman like that in his corner, I can say a hearty amen to the words of Paul Coughlin, our guest today on Family Talk. And for those of you who maybe just stumbled upon our broadcast, maybe you're thinking, what are they talking about? Why shouldn't guys be nice? Well, you'll definitely want to get caught up at drjamesdobson.org or request a CD there to get the full context. Now let's listen in as Paul talks about the difference between being nice and showing true love. Here he is now on this Family Talk broadcast.
Kindness is always a virtue. Kindness is a beautiful thing. What we often forget, though, in regard to our understanding of love and kindness, is sometimes it's the kind thing to be tough. We need to really change the way we define love. Love often means making the difficult decisions in life. Love is not the product or the byproduct of a conflict-free existence. It's true, Christian men are supposed to love their wives the way Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? He founded it on Peter. So how did Jesus treat Peter? He could be amazingly tender. Peter, do you love me? He asked that question three times. He says, agape, deep and abiding love. Peter responds with philia, well, I really like you. Okay, I really like you. No, Jesus wanted him to come close. He wanted that closeness with Peter. He also reprimanded Peter. He was tough with Peter. So he was incredibly tender with Peter. He was also confrontational with love as its motive with Peter as well. We don't hear that much about how Christian men are supposed to behave in marriage, but it's true. And if you want to stay on the passive side, that's your choice. Technically, statistically, you're headed for a divorce court.
Or an unhappy marriage, or one without intimacy.
And then you show that to your children.
Yes,
your children see that.
They think, your little boys are watching very carefully what it means to be a man.
They think, if that's marriage, I will find some other lifestyle.
The book, again, No More Christian, Nice Guy, really keys on the word Christian there. And we've been talking about this concept in general terms, but let's talk about it in Christian terms now. Is it your impression that the church subtly and sometimes without even intending to teaches nice guy as an identification of the Christian faith?
Absolutely.
You have to be that way. You have to be kind of passive.
And yes, and the reason why is because we read from the NGB, the Nice Guy Bible. And the NGB is only when you key in on the sweet stuff and you move away from the tough stuff. I think one of the best examples is when Jesus was sending the disciples out and he says, I send you out like sheep among wolves. Be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. I've been in the church for 20-something years. I've heard countless sermons on what it means to be innocent as a dove, personal piety, absolutely important to our walk. I don't believe I've ever heard a sermon on what it means to be wise as a serpent. The same word for wise can also be translated as shrewd, and some translations may well say cunning as a serpent. Luke 16, the parable of the shrewd manager. We don't read these portions of scriptures. We certainly don't meditate upon them, and they're not emphasized in most pulpits most of the time. So Christian men have been told to emulate a Jesus who really doesn't exist. A gentle Jesus, meek and mild, is as fictitious as anything found in Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code. But we cannot blame Hollywood. We cannot blame the liberal press. We can largely blame ourselves. We have brought this upon ourselves. What we need to do is bring in the entire counsel of God. For example, we've been told to be generous. Jesus, and we should be. Jesus also told us there's an end to smart generosity. Do not cast pearls before swine. Not only will they trample it, but they will turn on you, he warned us. But we don't emphasize that when we talk about a lot of how we're supposed to behave in life. And as a result, our lives suffer immensely.
Man, that's good stuff here. Paul, did you ever get to the place where one of your kids could have been, or even now could be, bullied at school, and it was not Sandy's place to go find out about that and fix it, but it was yours? You ever get to the place where you could do that?
Oh, I've done it. There was one kid that was giving two of my kids a hard time coming home from school. And this is where you talk about being a good guy, where you don't beat people over the head over things, but you still are firm and you're loving but firm. And yes, went and talked to him and put my arm around the boy and said, this is no longer tolerated. And it never happened again. These are things that must be taught to our children as well. Certainly our boys, because they're expected to go out there and slay the dragons, but our daughters as well. We're all disciples of Jesus, which means we should take on his characteristics. You know, he himself said that he was meek and lowly of spirit. But we need to ask ourselves, what was he meek toward? The word meek is synonymous with being yielding and submissive. You cannot read the Gospels, especially the Gospel of Mark, and conclude that Jesus was yielding to the will of man. What you can conclude was that he was yielding to the will of his Father. And that's how we are supposed to be.
Sandy, you say that there was a change in Paul. We can see it. When did it start to occur, and how was it manifested? And did you recognize that something was happening here that you had longed for? I'm taking you back over older ground. I don't know if you remember those steps along the way.
Dr. Dotson, I remember the time that he started going to counseling. I really started doing soul work myself, and I started diving into some books and into the Word, and I really believe that it was the Holy Spirit that started working in my life at the same time. And so as he would come home and share from his counseling sessions, we started building intimacy, more intimacy in our marriage, and talking more, communicating more, more date nights. And I was just so pleased to see that he was making progress, and at the same time, I had to do the same thing with my life.
It's always a two-way street.
Yes, it is.
You talk in this book, and we're really running out of time here, and what a time to raise up the subject of sex, but you talk about passivity in the physical relationship as well.
Well, yes. It's one of the most dissatisfying parts of a nice guy, Christian nice guy life, is the sexual side of things. Largely because the nice guy does not behave in such a way that makes him very attractive. It's not attractive for the woman to have to constantly bear the burdens of the families, the bigger burdens of having to confront the bullies coming home from school with the children and things of that nature. So it robs a relationship of an innate respect that really should be there. It is difficult to respect a passive person. We tend to not really like aggressive people.
Especially a passive man.
Passive man is looked down on even more. And so, yes, it leads to not a great sex life, but I can speak from experience, without being graphic, that it gets a whole lot better much quickly.
Yeah. I think that's the way it was designed, and that's not to be taken to the nth degree where a woman can't be an initiator.
Absolutely.
Or can't be the one who raises that question or that activity. But it is a man's role to be more aggressive in a relationship. That's what testosterone is for.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why it surges through our veins. It is such a pleasure to have the chance to talk to you guys. There's so much more in this book. I think I've got another 20 questions here we're not going to get to, but the title of the book is, and the one that Paul wrote, is No More Christian Nice Guy, When Being Nice Instead of Good Hurts Men, Women, and Children. Paul, did you gain a lot of self-respect when you began to realize what the difference was between being nice and good?
Absolutely. And let's please not mistake, because I know how Christian nice guys think. They think self-respect equals arrogance. That's part of the equation that they think. Please do not mistake the two. They're not the same. Self-respect is very healthy. And it doesn't mean you're better than everyone else. It just means you feel better about yourself. You're more comfortable in your own skin. And when you're more comfortable in your own skin, you're more protective, you're more loving, you're more like the guy you want to be.
And, Sandy, Married But Not Engaged, the two of you wrote this book together, Why Men Check Out and What You Can Do to Create the Intimacy You Desire. This is really kind of a how-to book, isn't it?
It is.
Got a lot of practical suggestions and ideas.
Very practical book, Dr. Dotson, and it gives women hope. There's a lot of hope in that book for wives on how they can recreate intimacy with their husbands.
Well, you all are very articulate, interesting people. I'm glad to have had a chance to meet you. Appreciate you coming and allowing us to talk about this book. Blessings to you both.
Thank
you. To you as well.
And if, after hearing this Family Talk broadcast with Paul and Sandy Coughlin, you, like Dr. Dotson, still have about 20 questions on this topic, be sure to get our guests' books, which we do have available here at Family Talk.
Just stop by drjamesdobson.org to request them or call us. Our number is 877-732-6825.
And as we heard Paul talk today about how much individual counseling contributed to his journey of overcoming passivity, maybe you feel like you need that kind of help today. Well, we can help connect you with a Christian counselor in your area.
You can find that referral online at drjamesdobson.org, or again, the phone number to call, 877-732-6825.
And just as a reminder before we go, that we're only able to bring these resources to you and your family because of your prayers as well as your financial partnership.
And if you have not given to the work of Family Talk, but you've been helped by our ministry, we would certainly appreciate a financial gift at this time. It's very easy to give. Just look for the Donate tab at drjamesdobson.org or on our new Family Talk app, which is available for free at your app marketplace.
If you'd prefer to call us one last time, our number is 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for spending this time with us today.
And do be sure to come back tomorrow for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
See you then.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.